and good morning. It's the beginning of a brand new week. It's Monday morning here at Mike's Place on the Web, and we are glad you're with us. Hope you all had a good weekend. I always like Mondays. Mondays is actually my favorite day of the week. I know a lot of people don't actually like Mondays, but I've always found Mondays as a good week, and I always try to get as much work done on a Monday as I can, because as Monday goes, so goes the rest of the week. That's kind of my philosophy on Monday. So it's probably, I guess it's about my favorite day of the week, Mondays. Well, how are you all? Scattered hither and yon all over the world. Welcome to today's Panic Podcast. And we're looking at the third part in our series, our survey of the book of Job. John Piper, I know a lot of you are fans of John Piper. He said, when things are going bad, that doesn't mean God has stopped doing good. It means that he is shifting things around to get them in place for more good if you'll go on loving him. Yeah, it's pretty easy to love God when your larder is full and you have reasons to get up in the morning, but it's not always easy to have loving feelings toward God when things are going from bad to worse. The book of Job is like a case study of a man who loved God but lost everything. The devil was sure that in time Job would simply curse God and stop loving him. But God knew Job would keep on keeping on no matter how bad things got for him. Always remember God's estimate of Job. Job 1 verse 8 from the Living Bible. Then the Lord asked Satan, "Have you noticed my servant Job? He's the finest man in all the earth, a good man who fears God and will have nothing to do with evil." That's God's estimation of Job. I wonder if it's his estimation of you or of me today. Well, as Job's story unfolds, don't forget what God thought of him. Keep that in the back of your mind. It's important to remember the kind of man Job was. He was not perfect. And by the end of the book, Job will be brought face to face with the deficiencies in his life. But never for a moment was God wrong about Job. We're in Job chapter 3 today. So run and get your Bibles and a cup of coffee or a cup of a glass of orange juice, whatever you drink in the morning. Assuming it's morning when you're listening to this. I don't know when you're listening to this. You might be driving around the car listening to this. If you're driving around your car listening to this, do not get a Bible. Just don't, all right? Don't read your Bible and drive at the same time. Very few of us can do that. Job chapter 3. Let's read a couple of verses, beginning to read at verse 2. Job 3, verse 2. "Let the day of my birth be cursed," he said, "and the night when I was conceived. Let that day be forever forgotten. Let it be lost even to God, shrouded in eternal darkness." That's Job. After he spent a week or so with his good friends in silence, he started speaking here in chapter 3. The scene is a heap of rubble upon which sat Job, sick and getting sicker, covered with open running sores, aching from head to toe. And with him were his three friends, who traveled a great distance to be with him. They were the only human beings on the face of the earth who showed up to comfort this great man who lost everything. And they sat in silence until that silence was broken when Job began to bemoan that he had ever been born and expressed a desire to die. Considering what he'd just been through and the fact that he saw no future for himself, can you blame him? Death would have certainly been a welcome relief to the miserable life he was having right now. And after all, Job was a man of uncompromising faith who knew there was something better for him in the life beyond. As bad as it got for Job and as low as he got, he never once cursed God, as Satan he was sure that he would do. But it's a sad soliloquy all the same. "Let the day of my birth be cursed, and the night when I was conceived. Let that day be forever forgotten. Let it be lost even to God, shrouded in eternal darkness." Job not only regrets the day of his birth, he wished the date could be erased from the very calendars. If only that day were non-existent, he would never have been born. In fact, he hated the day of his birth so much, he pushed back even further in time to the night he was conceived, believing the moment of conception was the beginning of his existence as a person. If only his parents had just watched a late movie. But no, he was conceived, and that was the beginning of his misery upon the earth. Now, in case you're thinking no follower of God would ever speak the way Job spoke, you know, he wasn't the only man of God who regretted the day of his birth so much that he wished that he could go back in time. Job 20, verses 14 to 18. Job 20, verses 14 to 18. Yet cursed be the day that I was born. Cursed be the man who brought my mother or my father the news that a son was born. Let that messenger be destroyed like the cities of old which God overthrew without mercy. Terrify him all day long with battle shouts because he did not kill me at my birth. Oh, that I had died within my mother's womb, that had been my grave. Why was I ever born? For my life has been trouble and sorrow and shame. Well, none of that's true. I mean, Job had a pretty good life up until now. But to be honest, having God in your life is absolutely no guarantee that you will never encounter problems so big that you fall into depression for a while. It happened to Job. It happened to Jeremiah, the great prophet. And it even happened to Elijah. 1 Kings 19, verses 3 and 4, listen to this. So Elijah fled for his life. He went to Beersheba, a city of Judah, and left his servant there. Then he went on alone into the wilderness, traveling all day, and sat down under a broom bush and prayed that he might die. How about that? I've had enough, he told the Lord. Take away my life. I've got to die sometime. Might as well be now. That's the Living Bible. Well, I guess it's part of the human condition. We all go through ups and downs, and if you care about yourself and the people in your life, then from time to time, the shroud of depression will engulf you. I would wager that some of you listening to this have felt at various times in your life that death would be preferable to life. When you get like that, all you can do is just trust that the Lord will work it out, even as you pour your heart out to Him. It's good that God hears and answers our prayers. And it's also good that God ignores some of our prayers. Aren't you glad that God didn't take Elijah, that God didn't take Jeremiah? And I'm sure that Job was glad that in the end he was actually born. Job 3, verse 8, goes on to say, may those who curse days curse that day, those who are ready to rouse Leviathan. Who are those who curse days? That's an interesting phrase. Some think Job was referring to other people who were suffering as he was. In the history of humanity, people have had bad days. People have had bad weeks. Some people have had bad months. And there are people, even very strong believers, who have wished from time to time that they had never been born. Others think that he was referring to religious types, like Balaam. Remember Balaam, who was hired to curse a person or curse a day? We aren't sure just who Job had in mind, and that makes the second phrase of this verse, those who are ready to rouse Leviathan, difficult to make sense of. In Job's day, ancient day, the Leviathan was thought to be some kind of like a Loch Ness monster or a sea monster that lived in the oceans. So what is Job saying here in verse 8? Well, here was a man so miserable and so desperate, he essentially threw up his hands in anguish and wishing, as it were, for somebody else to come along and curse the day of his birth so he wouldn't be the only one. And for good measure, maybe he can wake up the sea monster to eat up that day, completely eradicating it and therefore him from existence. You got to have it pretty bad to think thoughts like that, and Job certainly had it bad. Look at Job 3, let's see, verses 16 and 17. Oh, to have been stillborn, to have never breathed or seen the light. For there in death the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest. Job 3, 16 and 17. Well, here's a man that's clearly in a bad way, and psychologically he's in a bad way. And of course, if you read Job's words, you know the impossibility of them. I mean, nobody can go back in time. Wishing you had never been born won't make it so. Wishing you could just die, you know, can't make it happen. Job is frustrated. He's depressed. He's in pain. He's not thinking clearly. And he's rambling on about things he literally has no control over. I mean, he surely knew it just as you and I do. He's emoting, as we do sometimes. And he keeps on emoting. He was conceived. He was born. But Job reasoned it would have been better to have been stillborn. Now, this passage, Job 3, verses 11 and 12, begins with three questions. Why didn't I die at birth? Why did the midwife let me live? Why did she nurse me at her breasts? Now, in Job's mind, non-existence would be preferable to his present state. Then in his mind, if only the midwife had ignored him or dropped him, and finally, if only his mother had let him starve to death as a baby, all of this present misery could have been avoided. Well, obviously the man isn't thinking straight, right? Look at verses 17 to 19, Job 3, 17 to 19. For there in death the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest. There even prisoners are at ease with no brutal jailer to curse them. Both rich and poor alike are there, and the slave is free at last from his master. Well, Job didn't die young. He was alive, if you could call his present state life. Snapping back to reality, since he's alive and miserable, then it would be better if he were to just die prematurely. Now, in those verses, Job expressed a very interesting view of the afterlife based on insufficient information that he had at the time. Job viewed death as merely falling into a deep, restful sleep. He didn't view it as annihilation. He saw death as the place dead finally find rest, where there's nothing to do but chill out, where even the wicked stop making trouble. The great and the not so great all find relief in death. Well, there's a vital piece of theology that Job spoke without realizing how profound it was, I'm sure. In death, all earthly relationships come to an end. So when you die, you won't have a wife in heaven. You won't have children in heaven. When you die, you know, the person that you are married to, he or she becomes a brother or sister in the Lord. When you die, your children, they are no longer your children. They are just brothers and sisters in the Lord. When you die, your siblings are no longer your siblings. They are brothers or sisters in the Lord. So in death, all earthly relationships come to an end, and death takes away the power that one person has over the other. I mean, death really is the ultimate playing field. Now, Paul would much later on in his letter to the Romans explain it differently. Romans 7, verses 2 and 3, just listen from the Living Bible. Paul wrote, "Let me illustrate. Woman marries, the law binds her to her husband as long as he's alive. But if he dies, she's no longer bound to him. The laws of marriage no longer apply to her. Then she can marry someone else if she wants to. That would be wrong while he was alive, but it's perfectly all right after he dies." And this applies to all earthly relationships. In death, there are no parents or children, no master or servants. In death, masters and servants are together. Neither is superior to the other. John Wesley's comments, I think, are really good on this point. He wrote, "In the same place and state, all those distinctions being forever abolished. A good reason why those who have power should use it moderately, and those that are in subjection should take it patiently. Someday, we're all going to be truly equal." Look at Job 3, verses 20 to 26. Again, reading from the Living Bible. "Oh, why should light and life be given to those in misery and bitterness, who long for death and it won't come, who search for death as others search for food or money? What a blessed relief when at last they die. Why is a man allowed to be born if God is only going to give him a hopeless life of uselessness and frustration? I cannot eat for sighing. My groans pour out like water. What I always feared has come upon me. I wasn't fat or lazy, yet trouble struck me down." Now, from a grammatical standpoint, verses 20 to 24 form one long question. It's a long question with no answer. It's completely rhetorical. Job was a miserable man who wished he could die. But that's not the same thing as making a plan to commit suicide. At no point in the book of Job did Job ever contemplate taking his own life, even though his wife suggested it. Now, suicide, as a matter of fact, were not unusual in ancient times. There are at least six examples of it in the Bible. Verse 25 lets us in on Job's character a little bit. Here was the best example of a human being on earth at the time. That was God's estimate of Job. He was the finest example of a human being. He was a man of God, full of faith, and yet in the back of his mind was a lingering fear of something. He said, "The thing I feared the most has come upon me," or "the thing I feared the most has happened to me." The very thing he was afraid of happened to him. It was singular, so we can't be sure just what he was referring to. I mean, a lot of bad things happened to him recently. Was he afraid of losing his family, his fortune, his friends, his good reputation, his health? Or maybe he was afraid of losing the blessing and protection of God. Who knows? But he had a fear, and somehow the devil latched onto it and brought it to pass. Now, nobody's perfect, and we can do our best to live right and do right. But when it comes to thinking right, it's a whole different ball game. Controlling our thoughts isn't at all easy. But Paul helps us out a little bit. Romans 12:2. Here's what he said. "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." As we read Job's various discourses, we know that Job was a man who had lost his way. He never once lost faith in God, but at the same time, he saw no way of escape. His hope seemed to dry up. He was not optimistic that things would get better. His suffering had caused him to actually wish for death. Matthew Henry, the great Bible scholar from another generation, wrote this concerning Job. He said, "Let it be our constant care to get ready for another world, and then leave it to God to order our removal thither as he thinks fit." Grace teaches us, in the midst of life's greatest comforts, to be willing to die, and in the midst of its greatest crosses, to be willing to live. That's a hard word to say, thither. Let me read that quote again. "Let it be our constant care to get ready for another world, and then leave it to God to order our removal thither as he thinks fit." Grace teaches us, in the midst of life's greatest comforts, to be willing to die, and in the midst of its greatest crosses, to be willing to live. I like that quote. I've always liked that quote. I first read it when I was back in Bible college 30-some years ago. You should always live as though you're about to die. That's not the same thing as wanting to die. But you should live keenly aware that this day could be your last day on earth. So if it's a good day, thank God for it. If it's a bad day, don't make a big deal about it. There's a better day coming. I've always tried to live like that. It's not always easy to do because we get caught up. We think nothing is ever going to change. So when times are good, inexplicably we're shocked when things get bad. And when times get bad, we think they'll never get better, when in fact nothing on this earth is permanent. Good times are not permanent, nor are bad times permanent. Things change. But one thing is certain. If you're a believer, if you're a Christian, there are better days ahead for you. There are better days ahead for you. You basically just have to hang tough and live and enjoy this life as much as you can, knowing that there's a better one waiting for you. And Job will eventually come around. God will talk to him towards the end of the book, and Job will come around. But for now, he's a mess. But haven't we all been there? Sometimes we get a little bit hard on Job for the attitude that he adopted. But, I mean, would you have been any better? Would you have behaved any more godly if you'd gone through what Job went through? These are some important questions, and we'll deal with them in the weeks to come. This has been the third study in the book of Job in our Panic podcast. I hope you've been enjoying these. We're trying to put up as many Bible studies as we can during the mandated lockdowns in my country and in countries all over the world, because the more of the Bible you read, the more you study it, the better you will feel. Nothing encourages you like the Word of God encourages you. So read the Bible, pray with each other, encourage one another, and remember the lesson from Job. There are better days ahead. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow for Tuesday's Panic Podcast. God bless you all. We'll see you then.